Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then we consider what you know of the news of the day. Anwar Ibrahim has finally revealed his coalition cabinet lineup this 8 days after being sworn in as the 10th Prime Minister of Malaysia. This cabinet comprises 28 ministers, including Anwar, who will hold the finance portfolio. Barisan Nasional's Zaid Hamidi and GPS's Fadila Yusof are both deputy prime ministers. Joining me on the line tonight to discuss those who else made the cut and those who didn't, I have Dr. Tricia Yeo. She's the CEO of the think tank Ideas Malaysia. Tricia, we now have a cabinet, which also includes a deputy prime minister who has an ongoing trial involving 47 corruption-related charges. What are your initial thoughts of this lineup?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me. Yes, I think this is really fresh off the news. The first thoughts that came to mind were, number one, of course, the rumor about Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi, despite his corruption charges, being appointed as Deputy Prime Minister were indeed true. And this is something of concern to us, because we know that his trials are yet to be, you know, confirmed, and whether or not this will affect his ongoing cases. But we hope, of course, that there will be no interference, no intervention in the judiciary's decisions over his 47 cases. So I think that is probably one of the biggest reactions that we are hearing from civil society. I think many had been critical of this move, while understanding, of course, the precarious situation that the current coalition government is in. So that's the first response. The second, of course, is also some concern over Anwar Ibrahim holding both portfolios of Prime Minister and Minister of Finance in not this particular election manifesto, but the previous election manifesto under Pakatan. There was a sort of commitment that there would not be multiple portfolios being held by a single minister. So whether or not there will be a check and balance between Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance, who evidently has tremendous control. These two portfolios are the ones that make the major decisions. So that criticism, I think these two things really need to be stated up front. As far as his earlier commitments for a leaner cabinet, I think what we're seeing now is a 28-member minister position, which is slightly less than what was under Ismail Sabri, which was 31, and also slightly less than the previous one under Tan Sri Mohidin. So, of course, we still don't know the numbers of people who are going to be appointed as deputy ministers. So it's really too soon to tell whether or not really it will be a leaner cabinet compared to the previous two administrations, simply because, you know, you actually can fill up the post with deputy ministerships as well. Those are my initial reactions. I think in terms of the individuals, maybe you want to ask some questions. Sure.
Let's unravel those two observations. Okay, we begin with the precarious position that you pointed to. Was there any way that Anwar Ibrahim could have avoided picking Zahid Hamidi as DPM?
I think we all knew that the position that Zahid took was to support Anwar as Prime Minister. And without that support, whether or not this government could have even come into formation at all. So I suppose the alternative route that could have been taken would have been to appoint a senior member of UMNO who is not undergoing such a tremendous number of corruption trials at the moment. However, whether or not these senior members of the party were also ones who were supportive of the formation of this unity government is unclear. And so there are these twin things that have, you know, needed to be balanced out in the last 8 days. A lot of conversations about it. Number one, basically balancing between Zahid's corruption cases, and then the fact that he is what has provided the glue to make the unity government itself fall or come into fruition.
Tricia, will Anwar Ibrahim have to explain and justify his choices to the Malaysian public? Or is this just a given that we have to accept his choices? This is the minister lineup that he's picked. And I'm just wondering how this, you know, Pakatan Harapan in the first iteration of its administration had issues with communication. Are there things that they can do better this time around?
Yes, yes. I mean, I think that was one of the singular failures of the previous PH administration, that it failed to enlist the use of its communications ministry well enough, the infrastructure that is provided by the, you know, largesse possessed by an incumbent federal government. This is something that will have to be rectified moving forward by the new communications minister, YB Fahmi Fadzil, of course. But apart from that, I think not just with that one ministry alone, but having to come up with a concerted communication strategy across all the multiple ministries. And I think the fact that it's a multiple coalition governments, four coalitions coming together that have never really previously worked together, right? I mean, this is really the first formal time at the federal level that PH and BN are coming together. So what more this kind of cooperation and alignment of messaging and strategy needs to happen, and it has to happen quickly as well. I don't think the window is, there's not a great window of time that is given to this government. I think there's a lot of impatience all around, a little bit unfairly, I suppose, just because it's coming on the back of 2.5 years of political instability. So there is an impatience to see stability coming forward. The government needs to act rather quickly, I'm afraid.
Okay, so you let's go to the second observation, second concern that you had, Prime Minister holding the finance minister portfolio. I spoke to Professor Terence Gomez yesterday, who wrote the book Minister of Finance Incorporated, and he warned of Minister of Finance becoming a super entity in the economy, unprecedented concentration of power in the executive. What checks and balances can we ensure, given that we have the Prime Minister holding what is arguably the second most powerful portfolio in Cabinet?
Checks and balances. Well, I don't think this is something that we have performed very excellently on in the past. But what I would really like to see is put parliamentary select committees in place, which are actually ministerial shadow committees, which are a practice very commonplace in other Commonwealth countries like Australia, like in the UK, New Zealand, where these PSCs are set up to reflect and to scrutinize what's happening within each of the ministries before Parliament actually sits. And I know that, you know, this is something that hopefully both PH and BN believe in and subscribe to in terms of strengthening Parliament. Putting these PSCs will actually help. So, for example, if you're talking about scrutinizing and having checks and balance on the Ministry of Finance, you could have a very strong financial PSC that will provide some of the input even prior to parliamentary sittings, and then pull up budgets and have that kind of budgetary examination, which is not just going to be under the MOF role. Apart from that, unfortunately, right now, we don't have the right institutional checks and balances to do that. So which is why I think, you know, separating the role of PM and MOF is really quite crucial. And I think some kind of explanation does need to happen quite immediately as to why these two portfolios are being put under one person.
Are you surprised that Tengku Zafrul is making a return to the cabinet now as MITI minister?
It's interesting to see two senators going to be appointed who lost in their elections respectively. So Tengku Zafrul and Saifuddin Nasution. Tengku Zafrul making a return to the cabinet. It's interesting to see, and I think there has been a lot of pressure again in the last 8 days to ensure that professionals are included, people who have the right expertise and qualifications. I did mention in some of my interviews that among the ministries that require this kind of professional qualifications include Ministry of Finance as well as MITI. So So these two portfolios need people who are familiar with the technicalities. MITI, of course, Malaysia has just ratified the CPTPP, so we will need to understand what are the requirements, what are our obligations under this trade agreement. Some of them, as I said, are quite technical. So it's, I think, positive on a whole to see him returning. Hopefully he will be able to bring that sort of reformist minded mindset that he also did bring under the Ministry of Finance. And I also look forward to seeing what, you know, despite Dato' Sri Anwar being the Minister of Finance, he probably is going to be very busy as Prime Minister, who actually will run the day-to-day management operations of MOF.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Tricia, for your time. Dr. Tricia Yeo from the CEO of the think tank Ideas Malaysia. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be right back. Stay tuned. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim unveiled his cabinet earlier this evening in a televised address. We've had a couple of hours to digest the news and the lineup. Now, joining us next to discuss this is a political analyst, Dr. Bridget Wells. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, Anwar's first public test as Prime Minister, putting together this coalition cabinet. We all know he had multiple considerations and difficult decisions to make in putting this cabinet together. But what are your initial thoughts about the 28 portfolios and who gets to helm them?
I think there's it's mixed, right? I think obviously Trish has spoken about the concerns of the his holding the Minister of Finance portfolio, the inclusion of Zahid Hamidi. These are things that are, I think, of concern from a perspective of governance, especially from a reform agenda. I think we do see, however, some very interesting dynamics. The first of which is that we see some new ministries being created, such as institutional reform. I think this could have perhaps the whole kind of vision of his cabinet could have been laid out a bit more clearly in the press conference. I do think that we see that primacy of political compromise. We have six UMNO portfolios. We have four from GPS. I think that from the perspective of representation of Pakatan Harapan, it's very thin, especially from Sabah. GRS is not there as well. So I think there are some shortcomings in terms of overall inclusion, especially for young people. But I think we do see some very positive overall aspects in terms of political realities and political compromises, but we don't necessarily see a kind of general inclusion, and we have kind of uneven competency. So the primacy of trying to compromise means that we don't necessarily have always the best people in certain positions.
Bridget, what did the lineup reflect to you, the dynamics, particularly between the representation of different parties, different coalitions? What did that dynamic show you or reveal to you about political compromise and the nature of this government going forward?
So let's take each coalition one by one. I think in terms of UMNO, we can see that at least two-thirds of the representatives in UMNO and the different factions in UMNO have been given primacy in Anwar's cabinet, the Zahid faction. And of course, we also see the inclusion of Tok Mat and Khaled Norden, Azalina Othman. These are other members of the party that are seen to be kind of representing the kind of pro-party faction. We don't see, for example, Hishamuddin Hussein or Ismail Sabri. Those are people who are seen to be more aligned with PM as opposed to Harapan. So we do see a large chunk of UMNO represented in the cabinet, including one person from Sabah. I do think that the GPS and the different coalition partners are also in the equation, and we can see that you know, especially at the DPM position, Fadila, but others. So we can see that GPS, in terms of its inclusion, is very solid. I think the concerns have to do with some of the kind of the numbers that reach the two-thirds, such as GRS, such as Warasan, such as other members of some of the independents who are not listed. Muda, for example, is not here. I do think that we can also see that the representation of non-PKR members is actually very thin. You know, it's a very dominant PKR cabinet, not just in the numbers of eight representatives, but also the portfolios that PKR members have been given. And the positions have been given to kind of leadership of some of the other parties, such as DAP and Amana. And I think that this is, that has its challenge.
Right. Bridget, what will you be watching out for, particularly with, as you know, Patricia pointed to, that hopefully the, we have, you know, the independent judiciary so that the ongoing cases of Zaid Hamidi is not affected by his appointment as a DPM. What would you be watching out for in specifically in this role of Zaid Hamidi in as DPM?
Well, I think, you know, it's not just that Zaid Hamidi is DPM. He's been given a portfolio, a very lucrative portfolio of rural government, rural development, where there seem to be a lot of projects. It's also one that seemed to be a traditional empowerment position. I would say that, you know, obviously, UMNO will have its battle that has to take place in the next 6 months. He's been given a portfolio that empowers him in that role, so I will be looking at that. But more generally, beyond someone like Zaid Hamidi, looking at the cabinet overall, I think, you know, we have some very competent people in ministries. Adelina Othman, Hana Yo, for example, there are five women in the cabinet. I think the Minister of Education, Fadila Siddiq, is less known and less skilled in that particular area, from what I understand. I think we look at this issue of competency in the various positions. I was struck by Dr. Naim, who has been put into religious affairs, a very competent, neutral person and a very kind of sensitive area of politics right now. So we can see, you know, some very interesting positives, but also a certain degree of unevenness. For example, some of the ministries, such as human resources, has a person of lack of experience in that particular area or lack of skill sets in that area. So I think this is going to be a challenge. The other big issue I'm looking at is how they, well they work together. You know, I think that the question of how they connect. These are traditional political foes that now have to work together, and that is something that is going to be challenging to build trust among each other.
So what is needed then to ensure that this is a government that's not just a coalition by name, but rather one that is an effective coalition government?
I think this is where leadership is crucial, to set out clear priorities. I know that Anwar Ibrahim at his press conference talked about the importance of the economy, but you have very different perspectives of the economy. You have someone like Tugur Zafrullah Miti, who comes in, you know, having not won election, in fact losing, and having parachuted in here as a part of a political compromise. He is, you know, he has to work with someone like Rafizi in the economic ministry. I think, you know, what the concerns of both the Mujahideen Yassin government and to a certain degree of the Ismail Sabri government was coordination and cooperation on managing the economy, not having a sense of basically clear priorities. You know, I think that there's the challenge that Anwar Ibrahim has put himself in is that he's now not only trying to be a kind of bridge builder among all the different actors, but he now has a very important portfolio. And so I think I am concerned that about effective cooperation as opposed to competition being a driver. And I think this will require you know, much more leadership to have a common platform on the set policy priorities. And that I think is something we're going to see be tested as things move forward.
A very quick question about communication, similar to what I asked Tricia a bit earlier. How will Anwar Ibrahim explain his cabinet picks to the people of Malaysia?
Well, I think he did a less than stellar job today, from my perspective, in the sense that the delaying of the announcement, as well as not really framing the choices. I think just sort of listing them and then making a few very short remarks. I think that now the test is for the communication team is to lay out kind of how these choices reflect some of the goals, not just the political alliances of stability. I think that we do see some of that in some of the choices of the naming of the ministries, which I think like institutional reform, for example. The question also is we have to see who will become deputy ministers in that process, and hopefully that will be an opportunity to reframe this. I think simple things, getting lists out early, and having a much more contextualizing of the choices, kind of fitting in the vision. I think these things could have improved the communication process. But that said, I think, there was a lot of pressure to deliver the list today, or at least that was almost imposed individually. So I think we do have a clearer sense of some of the directions, especially from the perspective of competent people in some positions in the cabinet.
Right. Bridget, thank you so much for your time. Political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh there, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.